First of all, we spent a lot of time waiting in the Black Castle because that's where we thought we were supposed to be. So we were like knocking on the door, no answer. And then what happened? It went from the castle to the dungeon.
So we had somebody just, you know, tell you to go down the stairs and knock on the back door. And that's when I'm sorry you didn't know, but you were immediately put in shackles and thrown in a cell and forced to watch Battle Beyond the Stars for the episode.
Was that in 4K or was it?
Do you have Atmos? Is there Atmos in the dungeon?
Well, as disgusting as the walls are in the corners, we got a half legit setup. I mean, it's not like the top pick on Wirecutter for TV and surround sound, but it's definitely not the budget picks.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
We do care a little bit.
There is the dripping of the water that's kind of like in the background that can be distracting from time to time, but
yeah.
That's we just do that over our Sonos system. It's not real water. Everything else is real. Yeah. But
I appreciate that you added that chlorinated smell from Pirates of the Caribbean just to give it that real bromide.
Yeah, I insisted upon that. Chuck couldn't have cared less, but I was like, if we're going to do this.
Nobody wants a lawsuit on their hands. We took practical steps to make sure.
Thanks, guys, for coming out. We watched. So a little backstory. H tries to run everything. Okay. So
it's exhausting.
God bless him. And Jason, I can see on your face. And you had to share a cell with him. We did that on purpose because, it would just add more to the show.
Have you ever had someone produce you from inside an Iron Maiden? Is that ever, do you know what that's like?
No. It's unbelievable. Jason, if you turn to the side, you won't be stabbed quite as much.
It's just too much. Like, I'm already being tortured. You don't need the Iron Maiden on top of it.
Right. So when I was talking to H about doing this episode for us on Bat and Spider, you know, he was coming up with like the cable guy. He would just do whatever hit movie, Jason, that he would think would be a positive force in the episode of the Black Dungeon. And I said, you know what? F this.
Uh-huh.
I'm picking the movie, and you're going to watch what I tell you to watch. And he's half lucky that it's not just a pornographic movie. Like, I should have made him watch porn. But
like some black and white.
Letterboxed adult film list or whatever.
Yeah, it would have been approved in there, but there are 1,500 of those at the very least. So I picked Battle Beyond the Stars because it's sort of fits in Bat and Spider's wheelhouse, but also I wanted to throw H bone because, I mean, Jim Cameron mentioned in this, James Horner mentioned in this.
Yeah.
I can't imagine the size of that. The lower half of H in that Iron Maiden.
It was a huge reaction.
Yeah.
A lot of pressure. Yeah.
Right. And basically, it was an excuse for me to want to see it as well because I knew folks from the Dune Pod who I respect your guys' thoughts and the way you talk about sci-fi movies. I absolutely love. I mean, the way you guys can like analyze and make sci-fi talk entertaining, and I'm not trying to say you don't talk about anything else, but I don't spend a ton of time on sci-fi, so when I get to hear your thoughts on them, because it's not like I've seen either Dune movie still.
What?
Wow.
And seriously? That's why I can reveal myself to you because you're in my house now. Okay, what are you gonna do? You're chained up.
You're so excited to tell us these things.
Dale, you know Dune is available for free on HBO Max, right? Like right now.
You can watch it right
anytime.
Now.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, here's my problem. There's a big worm in it. People like that big worm.
I heard people love the ornithopters. If I hear one more thing about the ornithopters.
Effing ornithopters.
I will watch it eventually, I guess, but frankly, if I'm able to spend any time alone in my office, I'm playing video games because I don't really get to do it. So,
yeah.
How's Elden Ring going?
I stopped long ago.
Oh, you didn't make it.
I've been, I'm back on Witcher.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Witcher 3?
Witcher 3. I finally, you know, after what, 7 years of it being out, I finally sort of dug in my heels and really applied myself on the main story, and now I'm it's just amazing. I talked about this a little bit on Bat and Spider, but it is the most rewarding visual novel for a Witcher story. I'm just blown away by the story.
Yeah.
And the lore that takes place in all of the book series previous to that is present in some way or is referred to in some way in this game. And I just love that.
Yeah, it's great. Witcher 3 is amazing. And it is just a beautiful world. Like, and I don't know if you've gotten to the expansions yet, but you go to like whatever the French version of Witcher world, and it's just gorgeous, like absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. So that's cool, Jason, that, you know, I just started Blood and Wine, and I'm probably I played a little bit today, and I've already met, I know who the killer was, like why I was summoned, and I've met up with the guy who's going to help me find that guy, and that's kind of where I am in that expansion.
It's amazing how good the storytelling is, because like I am not a great reader of, I am definitely a skip dialogue person in a lot of games. Like I'm just like, I just want to level up my shit and be stronger. and like with the exception of like Skyrim and Witcher, where like I know all the story points for sure, because the story is actually just really well told. That's great.
Which one's
well chosen?
Which one's better, Skyrim or Witcher 3?
I don't know. I'm glad they both exist.
Yeah.
Skyrim is sort of like unparalleled in its like cultural achievement, because it's been out for so long and it's just like continually played throughout all of these years. And I think like the memeability of Skyrim is in some ways unmatched for video games almost. So I think Skyrim is still kind of the gold standard for those games, but Witcher is fantastic. And it was really fun getting to watch the TV show, like having played the video game, because I was like, oh, like I know these stories like in some way. Mm-hmm. So it was fun.
Yeah. I love your take, Jason. And the memeability is a good point, because even people don't know Skyrim. They know about the arrow in the knee at this point.
Arrow in the knee. Yeah.
It's just been like replicated through, you know, people's minds.
For sure, the arrow in the knee,
or just like the bugginess of Bethesda, like people, or like even just the like, you know, oh, you were out for a long time, like, you know, all that stuff, like like all of those things are just like kind of still jokes that people do, even the kids on TikTok still use those jokes.
You're right. Skyrim was, it's still like, you're right, I'm glad they both exist. I think Skyrim for me is just like, I lost, when my kids were young, I lost hundreds of hours into like my, after putting the kids to bed when they were young, I would just sneak down into my basement and just drink and play Skyrim.
Yeah.
Weekends, you know, all the time.
How old are your kids?
My kids now are 9 and 11.
Okay. So like my son is 3, and when he was a newborn, I was still playing Skyrim on my Switch, because it had just come out for Switch. Yeah. I was like, oh, Crystal's got to get up for a feeding or whatever. I'll like bang out like a little sneaky archer. Do my part to take care of the family.
Skyrim on Switch is like peak human achievement, bar none.
Yes.
I mean, it's fascinating. Yes. The only downside of Skyrim on Switch is you can't control the brightness. If you could control the brightness, I that would be it for me.
Yeah.
The only thing that I'm not comparing the two, but the fact that Witcher, you're playing a Witcher with a personality and a point of view, and he can reply back to that is just, and I think that's where it comes, you know, the visual novel comes into play, whereas in Skyrim, you're immersed in this storytelling and you don't even reply. You can't reply to these dialogue choices in cutscenes and stuff like that. But
Do you play Gwent in Witcher, or do you skip that, the mini game
stuff? Yeah, I haven't gotten into that. I tried 5 years ago.
It's not for me. That the first time I ever tried to play Witcher 3, that's like why I bailed on it. Cause it's like you show up in the first town, they're like, oh, let me show you Gwent. And I was like, okay, fine. And I'm like, fuck this corny ass game. Like, I don't want to know anything about this shit. And I turned it off and like didn't come back to it for years.
Yes.
And then I came, and then someone was like, this game's amazing. You stopped. I was like, yeah, I don't want to play that fucking board game. And like, you don't have to play the board game. Like, that's just like a weird side quest thing. You don't have to do that. And so I was like, oh, okay, great. And then once you don't do that, it's awesome.
But yeah, so
tip for you, thanks.
Yeah, I can't relate to any of that shit. I don't know what any of that's about. Like, I haven't played any of those games. I played whatever Elder Scroll, or like I played a couple hours of the older on that, Skyrim, like on like 360. Mm-hmm. I've never listened to the ASA podcast. Is that still going? Is Run still doing that?
I think
Run Mike D and the Skyrimatic podcast. One of the he's still at it.
What do they talk about at this point? The game? They talk about playing the game?
Well, a lot of the times, and I really get into it, but he like jacks in some audio recording into his gaming console, and he just records his playthrough, and he's like narrating and it's just so calming because I know Skyrim so well that he's like just hearing the battle sounds and the NPCs talking as he's like just like, all right, I'm running through this town here. It's just it's perfect for me.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I would encourage you, Dale, I would encourage you to at some point get back into Elden Ring, because I do think it's another one of those generational games where it's just like, the last third is like not the strongest, unfortunately, but there's some tremendous stuff in there that's like that really does stand out, and again has that sort of, I feel, cultural potential where like there's just going to be things that people talk about from it in the years to come.
That's you excite me when I look at Dune Pod's gaming channel and your commitment to that game, it definitely excites me and makes me want to try it more. Yeah. I can't believe the things you're able to mine from that game and your commitment to trying it. You know, I'll get there one day, but you know me, like Skyrim, I bought day one, I didn't start playing it until 4 years later. The same with The Witcher, so I'll get there one day. But you know, as soon as I can buy the Prima guide that says "go here at level 15," so I don't have to just die over and over again. For 100, you know, holding out for that Prima guide. But
you need that. Right. You need that with the. It's got an. We'll have a nice cover. It will look good on your shelf.
Yeah, I'll get the hardcover special edition version.
Oh yeah,
I was trying to find a strategy guide for Jedi Fallen Order. Because I started playing that on my Series X, and I found out it's notorious for, you go out on these maps, and then when you try and get back, it's like impossible to get back. Like, people get lost trying to find out how the fuck to get back from where they were. Cause you can't just get to the places. Yeah. You gotta go up and down.
It's a loop. Yeah. You have to follow.
Well, it's a different loop. It's a differential loop. Like, you can't follow the same loop back.
Differential loop.
Yeah. So like, it's quite bizarre.
It's a loop D by DX. Yeah.
So I'm like 7 hours or 8 hours in, and I literally spent two nights in a row spending like 2.5 hours trying to figure out how the fuck to get back to my ship so I could get off the plane. I already killed the guys.
Are you playing in story mode?
Yeah. So good at you. Some point I will pick it back up and do anything. I did get Sam going on Paw Patrol adventure, which is on Game Pass. So this is his very first console gaming. So that's been pretty cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's actually makes me happy to hear that there is a, you know, trying to get little kids into console games is impossible especially if it's not a Nintendo console, because there's just nothing really for little kids. Like the Lego, as many lies as you hear about the Lego games, they're impossible because kids can't put together these dumb puzzles, and Lego games are impossible to figure out. Besides that, there's really nothing that gives you the leeway and the leash a little kid can try without just, you know, like driving over a cliff over and over again. You know, it's so the fact that a Paw Patrol game exists is nice.
Yeah.
I'm not there yet, but my understanding is that at some point, like, the Roblox cult comes for you and takes your child away.
Yeah.
It's
true.
And you don't get to see them for a while. So yeah. I'm not looking forward to that day, but it's coming. Know it will come.
Just make sure auto buy Roblox whatever is not enabled.
Yeah. No, but, I've heard people getting burned out of house and home.
Yeah. There's actually two stages to Roblox though. The first stage is exactly what I described, but you're in Roblox and the kids don't know what they're doing and they're getting upset and they want you to do it for them. And you don't know anything about Roblox. You don't know what Roblox is.
Yeah.
You don't know that Roblox is, mini worlds created by people. And, you know, it's the most frustrating thing. And then all of a sudden it clicks and they get it. And, you know,
they're like,
that's my
experience
with Roblox.
Mm-hmm.
But we talked, so I had you guys in your musty Iron Maidens down here watch Battle Beyond the Stars from 1980 with a slew of people, like watching Jason watch this live in Dune Pod's Discord was just a pleasure to watch, because everything he said was just like, as I was watching, I was like, oh my God. So Battle Beyond the Stars is,
it was amazing. Let me see. I just want to see here for 1 second if I can find it. I don't know if I can. Let's see. Jason, this podcast is over. We're done now. What the fuck is this? Oh no. I'm just sitting here laughing at it. Oh my fucking Christ.
Yeah, no, it was fantastic. Well, here's the truth about Battle Beyond the Stars for me, which is I thought I hadn't seen this movie before. I was like convinced that like I'd never seen this movie. Somehow I was like, oh, like I've heard of this, I think, but I really couldn't tell you who's in it or what it's about. And as it was starting, I was like, couldn't tell you. I've never seen this movie before. Somehow it just escaped. And then I realized that I have seen the last 30 minutes of this movie repeatedly as a child, because we had a VHS tape that had been recorded over.
Oh, shit.
Except for the last 30 minutes. And never knew what those last 30 minutes were from. Like, it wasn't labeled. But I was captivated by what was going on. All these weird characters coming together and all this stuff. And, you know, I'll tell you when we get to it or whatever, like, where that moment was. And to have that moment of revelation, I've actually seen a third of this movie a bunch of times.
That's amazing.
Was quite the shock.
Wow. Do you know what tape it was on? What was the preceding portion?
I don't know what else was on it. Cause like our house was crazy. Cause my dad owned a video rental store. And so like we had like a bunch of, we had Betamax and VHS and we had, you know, Betamax players and a bunch of VHS players and stuff was always being cross dubbed and like, you know, we're recording stuff off TV and we just had tons of tapes. Wow. And then this was just a casualty of something. And might have been like Jaws or something was like the first, you know, was the lead in. And then it was Battle Beyond the Stars the last 30 minutes.
So Dale, didn't you work at Camelot Music?
I did. Yeah, I worked at Camelot Music.
Why? So when I turned 13 in 1983, I had my Christian bar mitzvah. And one of the things that
just a lot of questions already.
My mom thought it was a good idea to have a Christian bar mitzvah, that you could be a man and at 13. And
what was it called? Like, it wasn't called a Christian.
It's called
bar
a Christian bar mitzvah. Yeah.
No.
That's what it was called.
Jason's so offended.
Did any other kids have a Christian bar mitzvah?
My siblings.
Wow.
That was it.
What was the format of it? Did you read from the Torah?
No, we read from the Bible and
Testament at least. Or
we got your book. We got your book, and we got another one. We got the sequel. So I got various presents for my bar mitzvah. It wasn't as big of a deal. It was a much smaller affair. It was in the home. But one of the things that I got was a video rental membership at Camelot Music. And these were the days where you would go rent a movie. And the first one I rented was Lord of the Rings, Ralph Bakshi animated. But the deal was the rental was $3.15, but you had to have the $80 deposit for the tape, because this is when the tapes all cost $80 for the clamshell or whatever.
Wow.
So we would like get all of our friends together, get all of our money, and then put it in and then rent the movie, take it home, watch it all weekend long, and then take it back and get our money. So that was how Camelot Music did it.
Amazing.
That's crazy. I'm
stuck on the Christian bar mitzvah, to be perfectly honest. Yeah, I'm not going to be able to move on to the movie, but it's fine.
Dale, were you bar mitzvahed? How did it go?
Yeah, no, it's the same thing. Same thing, South Jersey, a Christian bar mitzvah. Jason, turns out, sorry.
Look, we all do it. I know South Jersey. If you try to have a Christian bar mitzvah in South Jersey, it's people are going to show up at your door and tell you to knock that shit off. Like, that's not going to work. That's
truck
not going to fly.
They'll have nuts in the driveway.
All right. Yeah. That's my story with Camelot Music.
That's an amazing story. So Battle Beyond the Stars is one of the movies that you and your
No, I never saw men, Battle Beyond the Stars. I had never seen it
with your men friends. You and your men.
Your men, gaggle of men friends.
Your men Gentiles, your Mentiles.
I had never seen this film. So thank you for introducing me to it.
That's amazing to me. I've never seen it either. It's produced by Roger Corman, directed by Jimmy Murakami, and starring everybody.
Yeah, but literally, just throw a shoe and you can be in this movie.
It's essentially a space opera where bad man shows up to a planet and says, I own you now. You start gathering goods. It's like a Bug's Life. It's like a Bug's Life.
I have a question about this. So this is Sador who shows up to the planet Akir, which one of
Thank
his henchmen.
Thank you for taking those notes.
One of his henchmen describes as a planet of stone with a single green dot with one spaceship, which is a weather satellite.
Yeah.
So, like, what is Sador's interest in this planet?
Right.
They're oxygen burners with lateral symmetry. That's a great one too.
John
I love
Saxon.
It. I had the same reaction,
right? From Enter the Dragon.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I had the same reaction as when we watched Kroll for Dune Pod, which was in the first 10 minutes of this movie, I'm like, this may be the greatest movie ever made.
Right.
It's possible. Like, I was like, it's awesome. Like, there's an alien ship showing up. Like, they're going to enslave this planet. The guy's got to escape. He's got it's just so much. It's like so much non-exposition, like, just throws you into this crazy sci-fi world that I was 100% in. It's the other thing besides Bug's Life that the story is like is Chronicles of Riddick, which I also love. It's actually very Chronicles
Never
of Riddick takes a lot from this, because it's the necromancers show up and enslave a planet and kill everyone. Whoa. And like, it's very much that story. And it's great. That's a great hook. That's a great sci-fi hook. I was deep in the first 10 minutes.
I'm with Jason. The first 10 to 15 minutes, I was like, what? If I watched this at the right time, this would have been, world changing to me, because I mean I love sci-fi, but and I love the concepts, but I didn't really even start watching it at my becoming a man age, you know, when I would have been hooked at 13.
Right.
And I became the man, the Christian man that I that I would become. But some of the concepts that were covered, some of the characters that were created for this movie, like the head in the iron lung. Uh-huh. I was like, this is effing, like, this is amazing. And it turned, you know, since watching
Dr. Hephaestus, he was a cool dude.
Since watching it, I'm like, well, I mean, Doctor Who probably took care of a lot of this stuff, which I would be equally as blown away by Doctor Who. But the fact that, this existed in this movie, I was like, this is going to be the greatest movie of all time.
Yeah. Mm.
I was with it for the first 40 seconds that like started with the black screen, and the music was incredible. Whoa. Yeah.
Did you know it was your boy before?
Literally, as soon as I heard it, I sat up in my chair, because it started
just
out
fully erect.
Very much with the Horner vibes. And I was like, this is a Roger Corman film. There is no way James Horner, who just did Star Trek, the motion picture, and is about to, you know, like on a, about to do Star Trek II. There's no way he's doing this movie. And it was him. I was shocked.
This was really during the Horner, the golden age, I believe it's referred to.
The Renaissance. Yeah.
So what happens in the movie is John Boy of the John Boy Walton has to collect a series of warriors to help him protect his home planet, including Dennis Leary, the Ladybug, and But as soon as he's done for this calamity of events, how he gathers so many people willing to protect his little rock planet is. It's like, okay, I'll give you that. All right. All these people are willing. They're just willing, you know, for their different reasons. It's all coming together beautifully.
Yeah. Do you want to shout out any of these folks that are collected?
Oh, yeah. I'm just trying to get the plot out of the way so we
Okay.
So we don't have to concentrate on the plot. But gather the warriors and then come back and train a little bit and woo the people and fight John Saxon.
Right.
And that's the movie.
Right, when the grasshoppers show up to take the harvest.
Yes, exactly.
Kevin Spacey and the grasshoppers.
And the just the like the gathering of the warriors and the warriors. I mean, I'm saying like the gathering of the different races and people willing to help Akira is I liked the gathering. But after like the first two, I was like, man, this is all way too convenient for this is way too convenient. They're
it's
just
very random.
Arms.
They just keep driving by people and they're like, hey,
they're just driving by. They're just driving by. Space is so big.
Right.
And they're wasting no time. The first people they come across, they're just these
it's
people.
Just
are
like,
just
you gotta really, help. What can you do?
Yeah. They're like, well, you could fuck my daughter. Like, that could be cool. Like I could do that.
I mean, this guy, you know, he's desperate to continue his lineage. Dr. Hephaestus is he wants to continue his lineage with, you know, a beating heart.
Prepare the conjugal suite.
the movie's like simmering horniness is to me the Achilles heel of the movie. I think there's two flaws. Like, one is the randomness by which the warriors are assembled of just like, who's at the coffee shop? Can you fight? Will you come with me? Like, just sort of the unrelenting horniness of, oh, like, wouldn't it be funny if I made you fuck my daughter? Or like, you know, like just like this, this very kind of PG-13 Porky style sex comedy that sneaks into the movie at various times.
I wasn't too down. I wasn't as down on it, but yes, they did elbow it in at random times, and you know, A-Team was getting on it. George Peppard was just like kissing that woman, and
he's
John
slinging
Boy Walton,
drinks out of his crotch. George Peppard has
and
a bar,
ice cubes.
Has a bar built in to his waistline.
Yeah, like everybody is coming back to Akira to copulate and rest before the big battle. Like, everybody gets theirs, including John Boy Walton. I can't remember his name. H has it
Shad.
Written down somewhere. Shad.
Shad. It's a fish.
Shad has the most awkward on-screen kiss with a woman I've ever seen on screen, I think. Like, they, it's almost like they had teeth or mouth guards in, and they just pressed their mouth guards in together. Like, they, like, I don't know what was happening with the kiss, but it wasn't passionate.
You need to watch David Lynch's Dune to see Kyle MacLachlan and Sean Young lock lips in the Mexican desert. It is very unromantic. Their faces just collide. It was hard to kiss in the 80s. People didn't know yet.
Right.
Yeah.
It was a different
generation.
People
didn't know how to make it work on screen.
Well, yeah. And the other kisser was Nanelia, the daughter of Dr. Hephaestus, but she had just been all like fired up by Sybil Danning, who played who played Saint Exped, and she said, "Oh, I could do wonders with that boy. I would recharge his capacitors, stimulate his solenoid, tingle, dingle, dangle, prangle his transistors. You know, sex."
H's reading is pretty good. Now, actually, I take back everything I said. Now it seems sexy to me. Now I'm in.
Right.
That was some crazy shit.
This is what a great producer can get you.
With the right music, you get that vibe going.
Yeah, that was, I liked her, that Valkyrie race. I was into it. Obviously, it worked for this, but my goodness, yeah, it was, like, you take Sybil Danning, who, you know, I would look at.
Yeah.
She's a looker for me.
Yeah.
But you make her say something like that, and I am just, I mean, what, like, maybe for a boy, maybe if I'm, like.
Right.
Coming of age and I'm almost a man and I'm watching this movie and I rent it from Camelot Music and she says this, you know, when she's got like her bottom half, her bottom boobs flapping about and like maybe I'm in, maybe I'm buying in to this, whatever she's selling.
Speaking of the bottom boobs, why is Saint Expa the Valkyrie always, why is she shot at like a negative 45 degree angle, like throughout, like why is the camera placed there? Like it's not a, like she's a beautiful lady. It's not a flattering camera angle for anyone to get the under neck.
Well, she's like, she's in the laid back, right? She's like,
yeah, laid back. Yeah. I don't, but why? Like, it's just, it's not a great choice.
It's like, we need
drink that wine.
They were like, yeah, we need to be creative. We need to give somebody a ship that doesn't just look like an upright chair with handlebars.
Right.
Why on this night does our ship recline and on no other night? Yeah.
Right. So everybody comes together and it's a battle to the death. It's a battle in space. It's a battle on the ground. I mean, they go boots on the ground to try and save this to save this planet. And geez, what are we going to get into first? But spoilers. And what's most upsetting is no one survives but Shannon.
No. Yeah.
It is like a high death rate. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a Seven Samurai situation where it's just like not going to work out for these folks.
And so, I mean, luckily they knew they were going to be fighting Sador. So death was possible and imminent, but boy, I mean, the time spent recruiting these heroes and they're all somebodies, but I mean, they just die.
Yeah. Well, can we talk about Gelt? Because Gelt is both the best character and also the best death scene. Robert Vaughn.
Robert Vaughn. Okay.
Great. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he's on this planet, this like knockoff LV-426 planet. It like looks like Alien for a minute with Shad falling around, and then he gets down and there's like a sex person vending machine. So there's like that little whole bit. And then she's still alive, but she's kind of undead. And like, I don't know what that's supposed to be.
Very strange.
But then Gelt is like living there and he is like hiding from a group of galactic people that have wiped his forces out.
Shad finds him immediately.
And then Shad says, we can't offer you anything. I can offer you food and lodging. All of our riches are in our culture.
The Varda. We can offer you readings from the Varda. That's it.
Which is enriching in Varda.
Yeah, and he's like, "Well, I've been eating serpent 7 days a week.
I eat serpent 7 days a week.
So, I'm into it." So he goes and he's got a great ship and like there is a space battle that's happening as well as the land battle that's happening. But I just want to call out the entire time that he's in his ship and there are these lights behind him and he's kind of like looking up and he's firing and stuff. I got the Neil deGrasse Tyson meme, right? The
oh yeah.
The whole time.
Yeah. But this is Robert Vaughn. This may be his finest role in all, in his entire storied history. Like he does some really interesting, like he actually has like one of the more multidimensional roles he's ever had in this movie. Like the scene with the kids, he has this whole thing where he's like, has this crisis of character. He's like realizing what his life is or whatever. Like he has like a whole arc, which is a lot more than he's ever had in any job.
Were you a bad man?
That's true.
Yeah. He looks great. His outfit is cool.
He looks great. He he looks like he's in so much pain until he's finally, you know, dust in the wind and then his body relaxes. Like his mouth, his mouth was so tense. Like his teeth were so gritty.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Get this man some morphine.
All right, here's the line that I love. He dies, and as he's dying, he says, "On a minor planet in a third-rate galaxy."
Yeah.
What do you have to do to be a third-rate galaxy? Like, there's 100 million star systems, and none of them are any good.
They all are shit. It's all like suck. Terrible Yelp reviews for the whole galaxy.
Yeah, right.
That is not good.
Did you know that Robert Vaughn... in addition to being the bad guy in Superman 3.
Yes.
And of course, you know, this weirdo in this movie, that his first ever screen credit is in the Ten Commandments in 1956. That was his first screen credit.
Jesus.
In which he played Spearman / Hebrew at Golden Calf.
Damn.
Maybe this may still be his greatest role.
Wow. Towering Inferno, Senator Parker.
Yeah, he's had a really amazing career. Oh, yeah. He had an amazing career.
Dale, I was definitely digging Gelt all the way through. He was like a Han Solo-ish character to me.
He looked good. I like his outfit. Looked good. I liked his riches that were just, you know, plexiglass cylinders and cones.
He did a great job, seemed to enjoy being in it. George Peppard seemed like he was legitimately contemptuous of the whole exercise and was just resentful of having to be paid to be in this movie. I felt like he was actively hating everyone in the movie and hating me for watching him in the movie.
He had an attitude.
He also had a rebel. He had a rebel flag, painted on his spaceship.
Well, look, it's another galaxy. Who knows what that means? We don't know.
Do you think
he's from Earth? No, he said he's from Earth.
But I mean, which Earth? He's, you know, we don't.
Yeah, he's been around.
Oh wow. Okay. Oh, like Earth 27 or something.
Yeah. He was born in South Jersey.
Yeah. What about Nestor? Come on. What about the psychologist from Terminator as Nestor?
Yeah. These are the Nestor, clones, right?
The clones. Yeah. I thought they were really going to accomplish something when Sador attaches one of their arms to his body. I thought like something was going to get done. So I was like, this is genius.
That was an insane 3 minutes of this movie. Like it came completely out of left field. So he cuts his own arm off, which was damaged. They'd established Sator's arm was damaged. And he took an alien and cut off his arm and put it on, not knowing that they're telepathically linked so that they could control the arm and cause him to cut his own throat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mentioned that I had seen only the last 30 minutes of this movie as a child. That was the start. Was the Nestor like arm mind control thing? Like it's like I'm 6 years old.
Yeah,
I'm watching Jaws. Jaws ends. A little bit of static, and then these all white faced characters with a third eye are using psychic forces to control a three fingered hand
while this guy is trying to get it off of him and it has to be cut off.
Man. Wow.
I remember every moment of that scene. Yeah, 100%. Like, I was like, amazing. I've never seen this movie. Once we got to that scene, it was like, I remember every frame of this scene. I know every frame of what I remember the reaction when they fail and they go, like that, like gasp that they do was seared into my young memory.
That's incredible.
It's just, it's weird to me because this is where like the budget problems come for me. Their faces are painted white. They're wearing a panty on their head. And then they've got a third eye painted there. Yeah. And I was thinking like the aliens from Star Trek, the original series, the cage, right? The butt head guys.
Yeah.
Those guys looked incredible. Yeah. And that was 12 years earlier on a television budget. Why couldn't why couldn't these characters be better? I was disappointed.
The eye definitely wasn't helping. Like there's no, like the third eye should have been cut for sure.
Like make the eye acrylic and tape it to their head. Make it look shiny. Make it not look like paint.
Buy a souvenir, one of those like, you know, eyes to ward off the evil eye from like a Greek, you know, tourist shop. Glue that on.
Right.
It would have looked better.
Right.
I was thinking like, how long did it take those guys to get painted? And how many days did they have to go home with like white face paint all over their
Honey, how was work?
he's still pulling it from behind his ear.
White. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. God. Terrible. This movie needed either half the budget that it had or infinite more budget than it had.
Yeah.
Like it didn't, the way where it landed was not, it didn't sit right with me. If it was done way cheaper, like I've seen, I don't know if Galaxy of Terror was one of them, but it was one of those Galaxy of Terror-esque movies where they were walking through the halls of a spaceship and you could see like the lunch to go containers like taped up to the wall. To be like the padding of like, that's what I needed. I needed either way cheaper or I needed like a blockbuster level to pull off the...
They were in the uncanny money valley.
Yeah, exactly.
No, the second act also just doesn't work. Like the going and collecting of the warriors, like it just becomes like essentially like this weird anthology show where it's like, oh, like it's like the creature of the week. Like they go meet like these... They go and meet like this weird fucking guy for no reason. Like, you know, it's mm-hmm. There's no story there. It's just like, it's just things like keep happening.
Yeah.
And so that's when like I totally stopped paying attention.
And for the gathering of everybody to come help, everybody acted on their own in their own spaceship, like through the whole movie.
Right.
They're never together. Yeah.
They're never together. These people worked. And so it didn't make you feel like they were on the same team, that they were fighting for Shad. Shad didn't give a shit where these people lived or died.
The only exception to that was Kamen, who was the guy with the green face, who was going to torture Nenelia until he found out that she was fighting Sador. And then he like immediately, you know, cast his lot in with them.
Oh, yeah.
But he had his two thermal aliens, the Thermites, and they like came down to... They came down to the surface and they like acted as the fire pit so that Cowboy could like roast hot dogs. That was some teamwork.
They were there for the hot dog roasting for sure.
And then they also did blow up the sonic tank. There was one really cool shot where the sonic tank is moving forward and it's backlit and a couple of the warriors are walking forward. That looked really cool. Like there were like just like two shots that looked great.
The Kamen makeup was also decent, I will say.
The mouth didn't move though.
It was on par with Enemy Mine. Like, you know, it was like sort of in that wheelhouse of like not entirely unbelievable. Also, I did kind of catch a feeling when like it Kamen's death scene, like when he does his charge against against the
it's like a Leroy Jenkins,
the lizard shofar that he sounds like as he goes into his death run. I felt it. I stood up and saluted.
And when he opens his, you know, prosthetic head, There's like 4 inches of plastic. You could see his, you know, the human mouth
his real
in the middle.
His real mouth hole. There's a man in there.
So two characters that I really liked were Zed, who was the blind man, and he had given Shad his ship, which is Nell.
Nell is great.
So Nell is awesome. Let's talk about Nell for a minute.
Nell is an all-star for sure. I love the idea of a ship computer just being kind of a sassy lady with like sort of like a indeterminate East Coast accent. It's like, well, you know, we're just gonna have to go where we're going. Yeah. Shad, remember the first rule of the Varda. It's just
she was like a gold girl for me. She was
totally
like
exactly. Totally. But when Zed dies, she has a connection. She gets a message from Zed, basically. Yeah. The Corsair has ended. He was the last of the great ones. Yeah. So, like, when that happened, I'm like, hello, Zed prequel prestige TV series. Like, when? Let's go. Paramount Plus, I'm calling you. Let's go.
Call it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Battle Beyond the Stars A to Zed.
Oh my God. Yes. That's amazing. Just mine it. I mean, do it. You're trying to get people to subscribe.
Who owns this?
I mean,
like, who owns this IP and what like coupon can we trade for? What stable coin will they accept?
And then the only problem with any of Nell. And Jason, I thought of you for some reason because your scuzzy drive comment weeks ago. But like the lack of fault tolerance in Nell when she starts to lose her mind. Like you can't rely on Nell can't hand manual control over to you because she doesn't have her wits about her anymore. Like it's very unreliable. I think
no, you have to fail open, not fail close. Come on now.
Yeah.
Like, what are we dealing with here?
Right.
I remember that part too, though, from my childhood. I remember that countdown where she doesn't know how to count. For some reason, like, I think as a kid, that seemed like very affecting to me. I was like, oh, she's so messed up. She can't count. Like, that's like when you know, you really don't have it anymore because all I know how to do is count. That's one of my three skills.
Yeah. And Nell can't even do it. And she's a spaceship.
She can't do it now. She had that sassy voice.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Mm. And luckily she pulls it off in the end, but even when Shad's like, why don't you just count from 10? I think she stops herself at 8.
You know, you raise a really good point, which is just how little of a shit Shad cares about anyone.
Why don't you just self-destruct?
Would you just blow up already and stop bothering me with you can't count? And like all you other monkeys who are trying to like, who said you're going to fight, just go fight and die already. We're trying to win a battle. The Varda needs you to just die.
The Varda and Akira need you to put your best foot forward. And Kelvins, just die already. Both of you.
It's not me.
It's the Varda.
Yeah, it's not
the
Varda. Me. It's our culture. Like none of these other people didn't have cultures. All these other species. Yeah. The first half, the first 20 minutes, I was like, this is going to be awesome. And I can understand why, you know, NECA has put out action figures. And that's why I see Sybil Danning retweet her, you know, a buy link for her Saint Eczema action figure. And now I know it's like
Saint Eczema. You
know, X-Men.
Say X-Men. Okay.
Thank you, H.
I have the notes. I have it spelled here. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I really, you know, I had really high hopes in the beginning, and then at the end, I can see why it's just kind of exists, you know?
Yeah.
Can we talk about Cameron for just a second?
Yeah. What was it? He was art director?
So, well, apparently he hitchhiked from the Midwest and got a job working on this movie. And then Corman was really pissed because the special effects were coming in really late and over budget. And Gail Ann Hurd told him that Cameron was like this wonder kid. And so he basically went down and he fired Corman, fired the head of special effects, and put Cameron in charge of the special effects.
Amazing.
And I will say, in comparison to Star Wars, obviously the motion of the ships and the storytelling conveyed in the combat is not nearly as good as what Lucas and Joe Johnston and the crew, Dennis Muren, achieved on Star Wars.
Yep.
But some of the designs were cool. Like, I really like the design of Nell, like the kind of like the top part. The bottom part I felt like was just boobs, which I found to be weird.
Yeah.
But I like the upper part of the ship. I thought was a really unique visual style.
Yeah, I liked the ship too. I thought it was a cool idea.
Yeah.
And I thought some of the modeling looked good. Like, and some of the exploding of the modeling looked credible too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So much more. The modeling looked good. The modeling in motion and the lack of life that looked like when you were, you know, the ship was just flying by on camera. It looked like a great model, but it didn't look like it was alive with life or lights or.
So, I mean, the movie was shot for like, what, like 22% or something like that of the budget of. Or 20%.
Two million, I think, versus 14 million. I think Star Wars ended up at 14 million.
Even less then. So like it was shot a fraction, like 14% of the budget of Star Wars. And the question is like, do we think that these ships are like 14% as good as like the Star Destroyer? And I think absolutely. I think that's totally a reasonable bargain at that price. They're not great. It's not Star Wars, but like it's 14% as good.
Yeah.
I wouldn't give the sets the same value. Like to me, like the sets of like the Death Star, even though they're not always really fancy, or the inside of Leia's ship, like those sets look fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And that's just good construction and good art design that they had.
Yeah, yeah, they didn't have that. They just had a lot more crap against the wall. And the costumes too aren't probably 14% as good. But the ships, I'm saying the ships
are cool.
were decent.
Right. Yeah.
I did love Sador, like right before they lose it all, when like Sador is like laughing about them winning, and like all the guys are laughing and like kind of waving and just generally being jolly. I thought that piece was hilarious, and then it all fell apart.
I think I also kind of caught a feeling when Sador was like, I don't want to die. I want to live forever. I think I had empathy for the villain in that moment. Cause I was like, you know, I feel you, man. Like, you
know, Jason, do you know how you can live forever? You just accept Jesus Christ.
Have your Christian bar mitzvah.
Guys, I mean, thank you for coming out and sitting down on this uncomfortable bench while we talk about this before I put you back in your cells. But it's been a pleasure.
Can we get some water? Like some,
no.
Some, like,
I no. mean, I have two toddlers. I've slept better in that cage than I have in the previous 3 years. So it's fine. Keep me in there.
Good. So just, you know, just let us know when you want to come back out. That's fine. Yeah. That's up to you.
Sounds good. Yeah. Well, I'd like to be out by Monday so that we can promote your appearance on the pod.
That I almost don't want to do that, but yes, I will let you out. I really appreciate you guys coming on. This is a blast, and folks, thanks for checking us out, and thanks for supporting us on our Ko-fi page, and that's why you all are making this possible. So
Bat and Spider appreciate is that. The number one. We love this podcast.
You all guys flows from the bat.
Thank you so much, Dale. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, boys. Have a good night.
All right. Peace Thank out, everybody. You.
Our theme song was created by Toby Forsman of Whipsong Music. Find out more at whipsongmusic.com.
This is a Tape Deck Podcast.